Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk with Blogger Who himself, Cameron K. McEwen. McEwen is one of the world's foremost Whovians, founder of the Blogger Who website, and author of the expansive new book, The Who's Who of Doctor Who, a Whovian guide to friends, foes, villains, monsters, and companions to the good doctor. Stick around. If this fellow can't make sense of the BBC series on its 50th anniversary and explain its total world domination, I'm afraid nobody can. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, brought to you by Amazon.com, Audible.com, and 1-800-DIAL-DJs. Please stop by the website, MrMedia.com, click on our advertisers, support the show. And remember, there's more than 1,000 interviews available at MrMedia.com. We've been doing this since February 2007. Hope you'll find something you like. And thanks for listening. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience of well-oiled and well-heeled Daleks that haven't used the word exterminate once in my presence in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. When I was a kid, Doctor Who repeats on WNET Channel 13, the New York Public Broadcasting station, were a joke. The sets and costumes were cheap, the drama ludicrous, and nobody I knew watched it more than once. Surely the kids in England weren't fans of such low-rent superheroes. Fast forward a generation, and my daughter became friends with Kara, a girl at her school who, like her dad, John, was a huge Doctor Who fan. Kara turned Rachel onto the show, she shared it with everyone she met, her mother included, and pretty soon all I heard about was the Doctor this and the Doctor that. Surely my own kid was not hooked on the Drek that I saw as a kid. Not even close. Now, if you have somehow missed out on the cult of one of the most popular television series on the entire freaking planet, the modern Doctor Who is a witty, sexy, spectacular of time, space, and a lot of weirdness. It's available on BBC America here in the United States, and the BBC, and Netflix worldwide. And this is not even your father's BBC. For adults, Doctor Who is like an entry drug to all kinds of brilliant television drama coming from the UK, including Sherlock, starring Benedict Cumberbatch and Martin Freeman, and Luther, starring Idris Elba. But back to Doctor Who. Cameron K. McEwen is one of the show's most devoted fans and one who has found a way, I believe, to make a living from his addiction. He created the fan site Blogger Who in 2007, and it is now one of the most popular Doctor Who blogs in the world. And McEwen himself has become a popular figure at Doctor Who conventions and events. He also was involved in the Doctor Who documentary, Who's Changing? Just too many Who's in there for me, I think. He's joining me today to talk about his new book about the show, The Who's Who of Doctor Who, a Whovian guide to friends, foes, villains, monsters, and companions to the good doctor. It's a spectacularly fun read and reference intended for both the casual viewer and the most ardent Whovian, collecting knowledge, characters, and storylines from 50 years of continuity. It is insanely great. Cam McEwen, welcome to Mr. Media.
Well, thank you so much for that warm introduction, Bob. That's very kind of you.
Except for all the stuff about the early shows being Drek, right?
That's fine. A lot of people think they are. Yeah. They're not all great. Some of them aren't very good, but some of them are brilliant.
My daughter actually had me sit down a couple weeks ago on a Saturday, and because I must have forced her to watch some old movie or something, she forced me to watch a run of, and you mentioned, you referenced this run, I think, in the book, from the first Doctor, I believe. He's visiting like an ancient Aztec civilization with his granddaughter and the other two companions. And I looked at it and I go, yeah, this was pretty much the way I remember it. And I think at one point I fell asleep for about an hour. I woke up and it just didn't seem like anything had happened, and the sets hadn't gotten any better. And
That's terrible, Bob.
I'm sorry.
A classic slice of BBC there.
Well, I don't know what that means exactly, and I'm just gonna slide past that. Let's just jump to present day Who and get right to it. Peter Capaldi, is he the right man for 2014 or a wayward detour by Stephen Moffat?
Oh, I without a doubt, he's the right man for 2014. Peter Capaldi, you may not know in America as well as we do here in the UK, but he's an absolutely fantastic actor and has got great range from comedy to drama to swearing a lot in some sitcoms. He's fantastic, and he's also been in Doctor Who itself. He was in the 2008 episode Fires of the Pompeii, where he was excellent in that, and he was in a series of Torchwood as well. So he's a very familiar actor in the UK, and he's a great actor as well. And I think he has everything that fans will love in the 12th Doctor.
And let me say for my American friends, he curses like a mofo.
He, in a TV show called The Thick of It, he certainly swears more than perhaps is necessary. And I know a few people who have younger children within minutes of finding out that Peter Capaldi was announced to the Doctor, found these various videos of Peter Capaldi swearing and using quite unpleasant language very quickly. So I'm sure a lot of parents were not very happy that Peter was announced. But I think he's a great choice. I think he's an inspired choice to go with a man who Peter is as old as William Hartnell, the actor who played the first Doctor, was when he was cast. He doesn't look as old as William Hartnell, but yeah, he's 55 and started filming this week and is looking great.
I saw on the Blog to Who site you've got some production stills up already.
Yeah, they've taken a picture of Peter with Jenna, who plays Clara, and they like to get these pictures out already, so to dissipate any kind of fans on set taking pictures or the press. But of course, they're there taking pictures. More pictures came out today of people seeing filming last night of Peter on a horse in his jammies. So it looks very exciting. And I have to say, I met Peter in December, before the Christmas special was aired and before his sort of proper first appearance. And he was a very lovely man, very pleasant, very humble, and very generous with his time as well. And he saw the cover of the book and he liked it, so that was great.
Good for him. I liked it too.
He's on the cover of the book, which is great.
And by the way, it's okay that someone's got a picture of him in jammies on a horse. My preference would be to see pictures of Clara in jammies on a horse, on the sidewalk, whatever.
I'm sure that a great number of people, both male and female, would enjoy that image. Who knows what we will see in the upcoming weeks.
Oh, my goodness. I love that woman. I mean, I will watch anything that she is in for now till eternity.
She is a great actress, Jenna Coleman. She's absolutely fantastic. And she's great as Clara in the show as well.
Oh, she's an actress? I've just been looking at her. I hadn't actually been listening.
That's terrible, Bob. That's so reductive.
I know, it's terrible, right? I've just reduced her, but you know, she is an amazing looking woman.
She is a very attractive on the eye.
She is,
but
just
a very
charming.
Talented. Yeah, she's lovely in real life as well, because she exists in real life as well as Doctor Who. But yeah, she's great, and she's got a great, as you say, she's charming. She's got a great way about her on the show, and I look forward to seeing more of her in Series 8.
I look forward to her being the second Mrs. Media.
What would the first Mrs. Media say about that?
Who cares? So, Cam, now let's continue about Capaldi. Though, were you surprised in August that he was the pick? Did you have any sense that it might be him?
There was words going around the week before that it would be him. I didn't think it would be mainly because of his age. Mm-hmm. Although I knew that Stephen was keen on having an older doctor, I just thought, it's not going to happen. I thought that the powers at the BBC would perhaps want to keep it younger, but it was a good call. So it wasn't the biggest surprise in the world. The biggest surprise in the world would have been if Helena Bonham Carter had been announced. That would have been a surprise. So Peter being announced wasn't a complete surprise. It wasn't completely out of the blue. But it was still enough for me to raise an eyebrow as my fellow Scot took to the stage and he announced his name.
Were you? Did you ever consider that it might be a woman or a minority? Or?
Yeah, well, one of the actors that I really championed when Matt was, just before Matt was announced, and again was Chiwetel Ejiofor, who of course is now 12 Years a Slave. He's been in that. I thought he would have been a great actor. Mm-hmm. To have been in the part. And a woman, I really wanted. I joked about Helena Bonham Carter there, but I think she would make a great doctor. People often say the doctor's not a woman. That's the line, but that's not necessarily the case. Time Lords, as has been stated in the show, can actually change sex. So the idea of a woman doctor, to me, was quite exciting because as good as Matt and David are, they're still actors of a certain age and a certain type, i.e. a white man in his 30s. Mm. And I'm all for change. I think that's what makes Doctor Who brilliant. I think that's the only way it can keep telling these brilliant stories. So I really thought that now would have been a good time to cast a woman as the Doctor, and got a lot of abuse for things. But when you tell people, if you say to someone, how about a woman as the Doctor, they don't like it. But if you then say, as I did on a number of occasions, but what about Helena Bonham Carter as the Doctor? Then suddenly it's like, oh, she would be good. So people aren't totally against the idea, the right person for the right job. But they got Peter Capaldi spot on. It was a good choice. But I'm all for difference. Or different to what we've had, mm-hmm. Especially these days, because, as I say, the Doctor's been a white man for so many years. You know, there's no reason, there's nothing in the show to stop him changing.
The two of the women that they've hired over the years as companions, I think, had they not been companions, might have made excellent women doctors. Clara, who I'm sorry that I don't know the actress's name. I think in terms of her charisma and charm and just her willingness to just spin on a dime, I think she would have been spectacular as a doctor. And again, I don't know the actress's name, but the woman who played Martha Jones.
Okay.
I think, well, she, you know.
Yeah, Clara, who's Jenna Coleman.
Thank you.
Just so you can note that down. I understand what you say. She's got a very modern doctor kind of feel about her. Very light, and as you say, she can spin quite quickly. Fee Magimon, who played Martha Jones, she was great as well, as a great actress. Mm-hmm. Now over in the States, doing great work. She was great.
Now, I got a little bit of just an anecdote to share with you about the announcement of Peter Capaldi. My wife and daughter and I were actually in London for 2 weeks last summer, the summer of 2013, during the time that the announcement was going to be made, and that was on a Sunday. I think they did the worldwide announcement Sunday afternoon, maybe 4 p.m. Yeah. local time, something like that. Three nights earlier, maybe two nights earlier, Friday, I think it was Thursday night or Friday night of that week, we had gone into London to see a play, I'm sure you're familiar with it, called One Man, Two Governors.
Oh, yeah, James Corbin.
Well, at the time, it was Rufus Hound.
Oh, yeah.
And so, right, okay, so maybe you know where we're going with this. So we saw the play, and we did something we have rarely done, but we liked it so much, we went around the back of the theater, and we waited for the actors to come out, and we said hello, we got some autographs, we got some photos, and we waited till the bitter end, and Rufus Hound came out, and he was very nice. He had his motorcycle parked in the back, and he chatted, and I got a picture of him and my wife and daughter, and he was so nice, and we enjoyed him so much. And so that was it, and we said goodbye, and he took off, and that should have been the end of it. Well, I wasn't there when my wife and daughter were watching the show, but I understand that when Rufus Hound came out, my daughter's mind was completely blown. Oh, my God. So, you know, it was pure coincidence. Of all the people we could have possibly encountered and met, to see him 2 or 3 days later on that show was, I don't know. I don't know what the word is.
Serendipitous.
Serendipitous, thank you.
But he also made a huge error. on that show as well.
What did he do? Tell me.
I'm trying to remember what it was. When you were telling that story, this is where I thought you were going, but I think he referred to Peter Eccleston or Peter Tennant. He said the word Peter because obviously I think the word Peter was on his mind. But he got someone's name wrong. I think he made a couple of mistakes and he was very embarrassed about it.
And maybe you can explain something that we didn't quite understand. What is his connection to Capaldi or Doctor Who?
There's no connection.
Total coincidence.
Yeah, he was. I don't know what they just get people who they can for the show, and they got him. So I really don't know why it was an odd choice, to be absolutely honest, because they had Peter Davison there who should be there because he was in Doctor Who and some companions, but Rufus Hound being there was odd. It really was a strange choice.
Wow. So
he's not been in Doctor Who.
He has or has not?
He hasn't, no.
No, okay.
So he claims to be a fan, but I'm not sure.
So it was just completely bizarre that we would see him and then there he was. Wow, okay.
Well, ushering in the new Doctor.
Yeah, I mean, we wondered what the connection was, and I guess there never was one, so...
No, the connection was he's a fan of Doctor Who, but there's no connection with Peter that I'm aware of.
Oh, so they might as well have just invited my daughter to come and talk about the show.
Yeah, or even me.
Or you. You should have been there.
I was busy that day.
Oh, okay. That must have been it.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about this... what I think is a wonderful book, the Who's Who of Doctor Who. Tell me about the creation of the book. I'm thinking it had to be an incredibly daunting task to take this on.
Yeah, well, it was great. It was last January I got an email from the publishers explaining who they were, and they said, we would like to do a Doctor Who book. Would you be interested in writing it? And of course I said yes. As any right-minded person would. And they said, it's the Who's Who of Doctor Who. And they said, we're looking for around however many entries it was. And do you think you could do this? And I thought, sure I could. So the first task was to get the entries first to give them for their proposal. And so I had to choose the 300 or so, 250, 300 entries that I thought these are the ones. Because obviously, and I mentioned this in the book, this isn't an exhaustive list. That would just be pointless. Mm-hmm. There are so many people in the Doctor Who universe or Hooniverse. It would just be foolhardiness to try and do everyone. And, you know, what would be the point? The internet is out there. If you want to look someone up, you can do it. So it's got more of a new series slant because there's been loads of books on classic Doctor Who, as they call it, and it's been written about so many times, but the new series not so much. So it does lean heavily on that side when it comes to other characters. So I just went through the episodes because I have them locked in my head, and I thought, these are the characters I want to talk about. Obviously, we talk about the Doctors and the Companions. They're the big things, the things that take up most time, and all the aliens and villains and monsters and people who maybe just appear briefly but have quite a big impact on the Doctor, but also on fandom. Mm-hmm. As fans, for some reason, some characters resonate with fans with just one appearance, people like Sally Sparrow, for example. In Blink. So it was an interesting task to go through all the characters, I thought, and then start kicking characters out. I thought, well, this isn't going to work quite as well. But it was an awful lot of watching of Doctor Who.
That must have been terribly painful for you.
It was a difficult... 2013 was a difficult time to be a Doctor Who fan. Yeah, so it was real, you know, head down, get writing... because we had quite a quickish kind of turnaround on it.
And did you ever doubt your ability to get through it? I mean, was it ever? Did you have days when you went, "Oh my God, how will I ever get this done"?
Did I have days? Any day with a Y in it, I had that feeling. because there was so many names, it just seemed like I was never getting anywhere with it because there was so much. But the publishers, Janine at Race Point Publishing, was very supportive and very helpful. And so it was just a case of sitting down and writing, which people might think is easy, but writers out there will know exactly how tough that is. And especially as it was my first book as well, and I wanted it to be perfect. So it was lots of days of finding it very tough.
Was it hard? I imagine, well, coming from a background of being a comic book fan most of my life, I know how precise the comic book fans want everything to be when you write about them. Every little detail. Was it frustrating at times to find and fact check yourself and just be sure you got it right? Because you knew if you made any error, they would be all over you.
Yeah, well, Doctor Who fans are like comic book fans. You know, people say pedantry is a bad thing, or being a pedant isn't. It's not. Getting things factually correct is good. You know, attention to detail is good. So that was very uppermost in my mind, because any kind of mistake will get picked up on. And I'm still expecting it, to be honest. You know, something in there. But, oh, is that right? I don't know. But there's a lot of things. Every time I wrote an entry, even though I was pretty sure, I would think I must check that just to be absolutely sure of what I'm writing.
Did you find that you had many gaps in your knowledge of the show? Were there any periods of time or any parts of the series where maybe you had looked away and missed something, or I don't know?
There was a couple of old stories that certain elements, certain interesting elements would come back, and I'd be like, oh, I'd either completely forgotten about that, or somehow it hadn't even entered into my mind. But that was mainly from stories that perhaps I didn't like as much.
Ah.
Shock horror. And I hadn't watched maybe as much. But I've seen every story maybe two or three times at least, even the bad ones. Shh, it's bad. All down to taste, of course. So there was a few elements that come up. I was like, oh, I'd completely forgotten about that.
Did you pick up anything that surprised you in watching for a reason this time instead of just watching for fun?
No, actually, it's what I find is quite comforting. Watching it all again, there wasn't any stories or any surprise in the case of, oh, this is better than I remember or worse than I remember. Everything was as is, because, to be honest, I watch Doctor Who fairly regularly. This wasn't a new thing watching Doctor Who again. It wasn't as if I hadn't done it in a while. So even though Doctor Who's got over 800 episodes, it wasn't. There was no real surprises. There was a couple of surprises last year. This was after the book was finished, unfortunately. You might not be aware, but some Doctor Who episodes surfaced from Africa. So these were found, and I hadn't seen them before. So there were two Patrick Troughton stories. So that was great to see new footage. So they were surprising, because they were new, and also because Patrick Troughton acts differently in one of the stories, and quite surprisingly, in a very exciting way. Hopefully we'll get that experience again. But having watched the stories so many times, that I didn't find any surprises, unfortunately.
Did the BBC cooperate with you, or did you even ask them to cooperate in any way on the book?
I had no personal contact with the book, although I do have people who I deal with at the BBC, because I'm just the author. It was the publisher that dealt with the BBC. There are certain rights issues with images in the book, so only a certain amount could be BBC images, and others are sourced from elsewhere. So the BBC were very helpful and greenlit the book. There was no issues whatsoever.
Well, a couple of things that I found interesting in the book. A lot of things I found interesting in the book. I enjoyed it, and I'm not a big Doctor Who person, but
that's a good advert. Well, I hate Doctor Who.
Yeah, no, I don't hate Doctor Who, not by a long shot. But I read it, and it was interesting because certain things were explained to me that maybe I had just picked up in passing from watching over my daughter's shoulder.
My publisher said the very same thing, actually.
It's very helpful in that regard. But in terms of the book has just a ton of photos from the series, but it also has these illustrations from Andrew Skilliter,
yeah.
Skilliter. And what would be the reason that you might have an illustration instead of a photo? Was that a rights issue, or just why would that be?
Well, for example, Andrew's well known in the Doctor Who community. as being an artist who's done a number of covers for a number of great books and such like, and so he's well known within the Doctor Who community for his great work. So to have him involved in the book was great, because I just thought it was all going to be just photos. And Doctor Who's got a bit of a history when it comes to books, that artwork is kind of essential to it. So I was very pleased that we went back to this kind of old school way of having imagery in the book. So when I was told that he was involved and he was happy to give his art to it and make new art, I was very pleased. And having seen the final product, the work he's done is sensational. Some of the pictures are phenomenal. So it's great that younger readers who are maybe not familiar with seeing Doctor Who art are still being exposed to it rather than just stock pictures.
Okay. And then the other question I had was, and I like this, is as you jump right into the book, there's no real introduction at the beginning of the book. You just start reading the book, and it starts with the Doctors. You don't reference the actors within the text of the book at all. It's just about the characters. And I gather that was a conscious choice.
Yeah. It's designed to be a Who's Who from the perspective of the fiction of the show, which can be a little difficult to describe, but yeah, it's all to do almost as if the show was real. We talk about the characters and how they interact with the Doctor and how they interact with the aliens and planets and such like, and how they all exist. Mm-hmm. So to someone maybe glancing at the book, they might not realize, you know, but it's all from the perspective of it's real. Which for some people, some people commented, well, it would have been quite nice to have actors' names or the episodes, but that's what we went for, to make it a Who's Who from the diegesis of the show, if you like, rather than sort of behind the scenes as well.
I liked it. Once I realized that was the method throughout, it made it a little more fun because you really just soaked into it, and it made me wonder if you had studied in terms of the fandom of, say, Star Wars or Star Trek or any of those types of things, because I'm sure that there are similar Bibles in those other types of fandoms and genres.
Well, that's interesting. I hadn't thought about that, but I'm also a huge Star Wars fan. And when I was younger, I used to get books. And I think there was a Star Wars A to Z universe kind of thing that was like that. So maybe subconsciously that seeped in, but this wasn't a direct copy. This was just, I thought, let's do it from within the show. But you're right, there was a Star Wars book that I had that did that, and it referenced it as if it was, they didn't mention the films, they talked about, you know, the Battle of Yavin if they were talking about the end of Star Wars or Battle of Endor. So maybe that was a subconscious thing there, Bob. Yeah, perhaps.
Yeah, let's go with subconscious, because what's that? Yeah. I'm sorry? Oh, excuse me, Cam, Lucasfilm on line 2. Okay. So,
funny you should say that. Lucasfilm did phone my house once.
Really?
Yeah, I was doing an interview with Dave Filoni, who did the Clone Wars, and that was a great day when Lucasfilm phoned me up and said, "Hello, Cameron. This is Sarah from Lucasfilm. How are you?" He put me on hold, and the hold music was the Imperial March, which really made my day. And I tell this story whenever I can. But yeah, huge Star Wars fan as well. Love Star Wars.
I would have liked the Cantina music myself, but okay.
Well, maybe they change it depending on the mood of the person.
You can go with the Imperial March. All right, let's get into something kind of fun about the book. And this is entirely – now, there's really no opinion in the book. You state facts pretty straight ahead. So this is an opportunity to get some opinion from the man behind Blogged or Who. tell me, and we'll go through a couple of these, some bests and worst. Three best Doctors, three worst Doctors.
Ooh, the three best.
Yeah.
Peter Davison was always a favorite of mine when I was younger. I was growing up, grew up with Peter Davison. Absolutely adore him. And I met him a couple of times last year. And he's, again, like most people I meet in Doctor Who are just amazing, warm and generous and fun people, and so Peter Davison didn't disappoint. So I loved his stories when I was younger. Bizarrely, a lot of his stories I don't actually like. He's got some real what we would call stinkers, unfortunately, but he's got for me some of the best. And his Doctor was always spot on, and he had a very interesting dynamic with his companions. To me, in the 80s, certainly in British television, I don't know what it was like for US television, but they were concentrating very much on the family being broken up and having single parents. Mm. And I often think of Peter Davison as being that single parent to three younger children that he had in the TARDIS. And of course, he ended up killing one of them. Oops.
Oops.
David Tennant, when he came on in 2005, I didn't really have any expectations because I didn't really know him. I hadn't really seen him in much. He was great. His season with Donna Noble, played by the beautiful and wonderful Catherine Tate, is one of my favourites. They work so well together, the Doctor and his chum, travelling the universe, getting up to great adventures. And it was just full of heart, which I loved about that. So Tennant was great. And my third, I'll go for, let's say, Peter Capaldi.
Really? Okay. Well, yeah. You're putting a lot on the line there. Interesting.
He's got some great eyebrows. Kidneys.
You skipped right over Matt Smith and went to Capaldi. That was interesting. Wow.
Oh, oops. Three worsts?
Yeah.
It seems nasty because I don't know how familiar with this site. I like to focus on the best and the good. So I'd really do negative things, but if I was to be pushed.
You're pushed.
Three worsts.
Push.
The sixth Doctor, the seventh Doctor, and I don't know. The second or third, maybe?
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But only because they're not as good as the rest. Not because, you know, there has to be a chart. You know, somewhere, and they just happen to be at the bottom.
I thought to ask you that because my wife recently asked me. Since we've been married, we've had five dogs, and I had two before I got married. And she said, "Okay, I want you to rank your dogs in order of favorite." And I thought, if I have to rank my dogs, you have to rank your doctors.
Yeah,
so,
all right,
all right. And so,
who was our favorite?
I'm sorry.
Who was our favorite doctor?
I'm going to say David Tennant.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure my wife, it was going to be hard for anyone to replace him once my daughter got her watching. I know she likes Smith a lot, but I think that she would probably come back to David Tennant.
And did she have a worst doctor?
No, I don't think she's seen enough of the older ones. And then what are the characteristics of a great doctor, and are they found in the actor who plays the doctor, who embodies the doctor, or is it from the writer and the producer?
It's always from the actor because a number of producers have made this comment when they write a script, they don't really know for that first series, a lot of the scripts have been actually written for the previous doctor. Mm. So a script really has to be doctor-proof. A script has to be able to be read by any doctor. And curiously now on the internet, you get to hear some of the older doctors reading some of Matt Smith's lines. Sylvester McCoy doing Matt Smith's Pandorica speech, for example. So this is happening now. So really, it comes down to the choice of the actor, which of course comes from the whoever's in charge of the show, the producer, or as we have now, a showrunner. So when they choose an actor, they've got sort of ideas, but they're almost projecting onto that actor. They're thinking, they're going to give me what I want. So if we look at David Tennant, Russell T Davies had worked with David Tennant, as had producer Julie Gardner, so they knew exactly what he was like and what his capabilities were as an actor and as a person, and they'd made up their mind quite a while before that they wanted David, and David was the only choice for the 10th Doctor, or rather he was the first. They probably had others in case David said no. So they saw that, and in the past, people like Peter Davison was chosen, and Colin Baker was chosen by John Nathan Turner because he was aware of them and knew what they could do and what they would bring. Particularly in the case of Peter Davison, John Nathan Turner wanted an actor who was completely different to Tom Baker. So there he chose an actor because he knew that, oh, that's what I want. But very rarely, if at all, do you visibly see this. We want you to act like this. More often than not, it's like, you do your thing, that's what we want. And particularly perhaps maybe with Capaldi, that he's maybe sat down with Stephen Moffat, because Capaldi's a writer as well, and a director as well as an actor. So maybe they sat down to chew over some ideas about what they wanted, because they've had that time. Perhaps Smith and Moffat did that as well.
I'm guessing that they're probably able to write better for Capaldi, as known a quantity and quality as he is, compared to bringing on Smith or Tennant or any of those guys. Maybe that the world didn't know as well. But you know, with Capaldi, I guess, you know, especially in the UK, you know what you're getting in certain terms. So you know where he can go with his personality and wit and charisma.
Yeah, I think absolutely agree. I think with the writers involved, and I think because Capaldi's of a certain age, they can pitch those stories perfectly. I don't know how far in advance the writing of the scripts for Series 8 would have been taking place, but they're filming now, so they probably had a good chance to imbue them with the Capaldi, as it were. And Stephen's been coming out with these comments recently that he's going to be a bit more fiercer, and a bit more like, say, Tom Baker or Christopher Eccleston, a bit more perhaps aggressive, as we saw in his eyebrows in The Day of the Doctor.
Yes, I did see that. And they cut away from him way too quickly at the end. I would have liked another minute. I think most people would. But a tease is a tease, right?
Yeah, well, in the old days, back in before the internet, when the Doctor regenerated, again, at the end of an episode, it was very quick. It was sometimes they didn't even get to say a word. Mm. The old Doctor would be lying down, boom, becomes the next one, sits up, that's it. So we've been, with the advent of the series post 2005, when David came from Chris, he got a few lines, so we got a little bit of a feel. Same with Matt, he had a couple of lines, ran about the TARDIS. Capaldi seems to have had slightly less, but if you look at the past, sometimes they barely got a line.
What was Capaldi's last line in the anniversary show? It was, "Do you know how to fly this thing?"
You know how to fly this thing in the Christmas special, yeah.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah. Well, you know, I pay a little attention. All right, let's come back to some lists. Okay. Top three companions, worst three companions.
Ooh, okay. My very favorite companion, and I alluded to this earlier, is Donna Noble, played by the amazing Catherine Tate. Donna, she first appeared in a story. It was a 2006 Christmas special, The Runaway Bride. Very abrasive character, almost like one of our sketch show characters. But I loved her. I thought, this is the perfect person to travel with the Doctor. And when she didn't travel with him after that story, I thought, they've missed something here. And I guess what happened was that Russell and Julie, who were running the show, also realised, oh, you know, we've missed a trick here, let's get her on board. But because Catherine was so busy, they thought she'll never do it. So, but they asked her, she said yes. And she was brilliant. And her journey, her season with David is incredible. And she's such a great actress as well. She's got some great stories in there. And some of my favourite Doctor Who moments are of Donna. In fact, on my website, I did my 50 favourite stories of all time. And there's a story called Turn Left at number one, which doesn't really feature the Doctor, but it's all about Donna. So she's my number one companion. Number two would be Sarah Jane Smith. Played by Liz Sladen, who's very sadly no longer with us. Although I was kind of born when she was kind of on telly, 73. I didn't really see her when I was young. I got into Sarah Jane when I was a wee bit older and started buying the VHSs. If you can imagine such a thing as buying a VHS, crazy. And absolutely fell in love with her because she's such a, again, like Donna, she's friendly with the Doctor. They like to have fun. And the great thing about Liz is she works so well with any Doctor. She's worked with David and she was brilliant with David. And Matt did a story on her spin-off show and they were great together again. And it's sad we wouldn't see her with somebody like Peter because it would just be great. But the character of Sarah Jane is great because she came from a time where I think the companions weren't that well served. But she brought her own personality to it. And my third favourite companion, I'll go with Tegan, who's an Australian air hostess who travelled with the Fifth Doctor, played by Peter Davison. She's a very abrasive character. I think that maybe says what I like about my women.
I see that, yeah.
But she was great because she was always arguing with the doctor and always questioning, which is great. It made for, to me, a fascinating dynamic. I know Peter Davison wasn't that keen on it, but for me, it was great. It really suited the time. She was very forthright. And she might have worn high heels in a quarry, but she was a great character to have in the TARDIS. And sometimes the actress who played her, Tegan, Janet Fielding, sometimes plays down her characterization. I think she did a great job. I think she was a great force in the TARDIS, and quite like anything beforehand as well. She was a one in a million, that gal.
All right. And what about your worst three?
Worst three. Oh, Chameleon, who was a robot, an android cyborg thing that could take the form of people's bodies, was useless and got dumped fairly quickly by the production team. He got put in a cupboard and then they brought him out for a story to get rid of him. But that was to do with the limitations of technology. But as a companion, he didn't work that well. Sticking with the 80s, Adric, who's not much loved by a lot of people, he was a bit of a... difficult to describe, to be polite about him. he wasn't that engaging a character. He was always, to me, too whiny and moany. And he got killed off, which was great. but he had a very great ending. He had a super, super story to go out on. And he died very well. And that's tricky. Mel, who travelled with the Seventh Doctor, played by Bonnie Langford, she was an 80s companion, but was very much a throwback to the 60s, always screaming and just generally very annoying. It didn't help that at the time she was in, the production values weren't very good, and the stories perhaps weren't up to scratch. But she was dreadful. But a lovely person, Bonnie Langford.
I'm sure. And we're not commenting on the actresses.
No, exactly.
Or the actors.
This is the part she played.
Yes. And just for what it's worth, I was thinking about as you were going through, my list would be completely different. And maybe that's because I haven't watched enough, but my top...
Is Clara number one?
Yes. Clara would be number one. Amy would be number two. Martha would be number three. And then I would put Donna on the other list.
Whoa.
Sorry. I have not enjoyed her on Doctor Who any more than I enjoyed her on The American Office for two seasons. I thought that she put a dagger in the heart of The American Office, and I just
Hold on, I'm just going to phone Catherine Tate and let her know.
I'm sorry. Maybe I should move on.
That's my wife you're talking about.
Okay. All right. I wish you both the best.
Thank you.
I just, wow. Don't expect me to show up for the wedding. I don't think I'd enjoy that. I will send a tasteful gift, perhaps.
And do you have a third worst companion?
I do not. I have not seen enough to get to I don't think I have a second either, frankly.
Oh, so she's just the worst.
Well, Rory is kind of annoying.
Yeah.
He was. Yeah. I whenever he wasn't there, I liked it more. when he was there, it was just so... tangled up. I don't know. I just didn't care for it. How about top three villains and worst three villains?
Oh, that's a good one.
Okay.
Now, when you say villains, this is how a geek I am. Do you mean like monsters and aliens, or do you just mean like a villain?
Either one. Whatever works for you. I know you split them up in the book, but however you prefer.
I love the Master, and I think the Master is... travelled through time with the Doctor in some great stories, joined in the John Pertwee era in the very early 70s, played by Roger Delgado, who's fantastic, very charismatic, very suave, but a very bad man. And then he came back as a degenerated Master, played by various other actors, and was great. And then he came back in the 80s, a bit more pantomime, unfortunately, in the 80s. Didn't really do him justice, the character, but I loved the way they brought him back in 2007 with John Sim, who's a fantastic actor, playing the Master. And he's a really bad man, but slightly insane now, which explains why he does these things. So he's a villain that I absolutely adore. I think he's fantastic. Other villain, Davros as well, similarly, started life back in Genesis of the Daleks and Tom Baker's time. From, you know, it's not often that somebody has a first story and an actor really hits every note perfectly, especially with something like Davros, who could very easily be seen as a kind of, that guy's just insane and unbelievable. Davros is a scientist and he wanted to help his people. That was his raison d'etre, if you like. And so his introduction was fantastic. Again, he wasn't that well served when he came back time and time again in the 80s. But when Russell brought him back in 2008, he was superb and just so superbly played again. And again, very menacing and evil. You know, no sense of good about him this time. He was just evil and wanted his race to reign supreme. So he would be number two. Number three, the villains. I'll go with an alien that I like called the Pteroleptals. He showed it. Yeah.
I must have missed that one.
Yeah, that's a Peter Davison monster. They crash landed on Earth. They had a very fascinating backstory that they came from an alien race who had culture. They loved art and stuff, but they liked to fight. They liked war. They only had one story, but they've been name checked a couple of times in the Matt Smith era. So I really liked them because they were an old fashioned baddie. They couldn't really exist these days. They'd have to do something different with them, but they were very old-fashioned, almost like a 60s villain brought up into just as a throwback when they brought them back in the 80s. But I enjoyed that. I mean, I like a bit of retro fun.
Alright.
Worst three? I mean, this is the problem with Doctor Who. There's been a lot of bad villains.
Yeah.
Lot of bad villains. The Candyman springs to mind, who was a big... Yeah, robot made out of sweets that appeared in the Sylvester McCoy era.
He's the one who liked people to die with a smile on their face, right?
Yeah, I mean, don't we all?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, he was pretty bad. Just because he looked so... It was just a comical look, which you could argue that's what they were going for, but no, really, no thanks. I don't want to... to criticise the McCoy era too much, so I'll move on to a different era. The worst. People often say the Monoids were pretty bad, but I actually like them. They were from the William Hartnell era. That's a tough one to think of three bad ones, two other bad ones. Can I get back to you on that?
Sure.
Yeah.
We can move on to something else.
Yeah.
How about, and this will be the last list, what are the top three Doctor Who conventions around the world? That, you know, I mean, if you really want to call yourself a Whovian, you need to at some point go to one of these.
Yeah. Wow. I haven't been to it, but Gallifrey won over in Los Angeles, which is about to happen, I think, in February. That's certainly one of the biggest, if not the biggest. It's the biggest annual one, for sure. I think it's about 4,000 people go to. I've not been, unfortunately. I've not been invited or had the money to go out. It's quite expensive to go to LA.
It is.
From the UK. That's one that they get great acts to go out, great actors and so many great people who've been involved in Doctor Who from being in the show and being from behind the scenes, but also people who've written things like comics or the audio dramas and things like that. So it's a real broad range of people from the past and from the present and from different forms of media that Doctor Who takes place. In the UK, we've got this last year, we had the amazing Doctor Who celebration organised by BBC Worldwide, and they had done one the previous year in Cardiff in the Millennium Centre, and both events were sublime. They had great guests. I mean, they had so many guests. It was difficult to see them all. I was there for the whole weekend and I didn't get to see everybody that I wanted to. They just had so many great guests, including actors who play the Doctor, companions, writers, directors, various people. But they had so many other things on. A lot of things for kids, a lot of different panels. They had exhibits as well. It was so well organized. So that for me, it was great because it was the 50th anniversary weekend, and I couldn't think of a better place to be surrounded by Doctor Who fans in this great environment. And I really hope the BBC think about doing them, maybe not every year, but maybe every second year, because there's certainly a hunger for it. Mm-hmm. People came from around the world to go to this one in London, but they could be, you know, I know so many people that couldn't go in the UK. So if it were me, I would do it every year in the UK, but you know, I think maybe they'll do it every 2 years. And other than that, I mean, there's so many great. I'm not that familiar with the US. I know Chicago does a great one. Mm-hmm. There was one a few months ago. I know a few friends that went to that took part, and a few friends who went just as convention goers. It's they always get great guests as well, and they always get great people going along dressing up. Of course, cosplay is one of the great things now, but Doctor Who people love to get dressed up. To show their love for the show, which is something that we've looked at in our documentary, Who's Changing. We look at cosplayers and why people dress up, because it's something I don't quite get why people dress up. I don't know if you dress up, Bob.
I do not, but my daughter does. She's actually made videos of herself reenacting the Doctor running and chasing and jumping, yeah. and they're pretty damn good, I must say. I've never, even going back to my own teenage days in comic books, and I just never got the urge to dress up as a character.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. It's a very positive thing. People, you know, all the kids are doing and spending a lot of time making the costumes or sourcing the outfits. We interviewed a number of great people who the passion. I mean, I claim to be a fan, but you know, their fan passions go way past mine, I think, because they love it in a different way, certainly than I do. But it's one of the things that I never knew when I was growing up, people dressing up in Doctor Who costumes. I think it's great. It's very positive. I just couldn't do it.
But. Well, if I can get my daughter's permission, and I don't know if she will allow me, but I may try to tag her Doctor Who short film at the end of this interview, because maybe some more people will see it. What about, so this, you will now have people buying your book and putting it on their shelves with their Doctor Who stuff. What Doctor Who books are must reads and must have on Cam McEwan's bookshelf?
Ooh, well, if I can go back to the past, if I may, the books that inspired me, and which I think are probably out of print, but you could probably get them on eBay or a place like that. There's a great, I'm going to struggle to remember the names of the authors, but there was a great book released by BBC Books, and it was an episode guide, which I find very handy, much handier than the internet. You can just jump into it and see, for instance, production dates or broadcast dates. So it was a Doctor Who Pro episode guide released in 96. It's a McGann release. It'll be 96, 97. And it is fabulous. It goes into every episode up until that point in great detail. And it's a nice handbook size. It was always a book that I loved just to dip into to refresh my mind. And I've still got it now. It's very handy, usually for dates or actors. I just like to slip into it. Because the internet, you have to use buttons and type, so that you know that changes. So that was one that I really liked that one. And there was a great A to Z that came out. Yes, in the 90s. These were all my formative years reading Doctor Who books when they came out. And there's a great encyclopedia by Gary Russell. Gary, who's these books and was script editor. He's got the great encyclopedia fantastic book that you can get. It's also online, and there's an iPad version, but I don't have an iPad, so I can't do that, unfortunately. And there was a great book that came out last year called The Vault. It's a beautiful coffee table book, and it's got great pictures from 63 right up to 2013, looking at Doctor Who. Not just the show itself, but all the products in the media around it, which is fascinating to me to see how things have changed throughout the years. And that was a beautiful book. I think that was Marcus Hearn that wrote that one. It's a really classy looking book.
Well, funny you should mention products, because I wanted to ask you if, you know, when you're having a spot of tea, if you what you would, might drink it out of. This is my daughter's.
Is it bigger on the inside?
It is, I believe, bigger on the inside. Would you like to take a look?
Wow. Oh, I can.
You can see yourself.
That is weird. I saw my own reflection. Whoa, it just blew my mind. I don't drink tea.
What?
Yeah. I don't drink tea.
Neither do I. I just assumed.
I do have a range of Doctor Who mugs, but they're all quite old, so I don't need to buy any new ones yet.
Right.
And it's strange the amount of Doctor Who products you can get nowadays. Things like that just didn't happen, 10, 20 years ago, but now you can get a Doctor Who everything. Today I saw a Doctor Who sonic screwdriver pizza cutter.
Oh.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite? Now, my daughter has a collection of Doctor Who sonic screwdrivers. Do you have a favorite? And is there one? There was one. And I wish she was here. I could ask her which one just broke so quickly.
Ooh. That's not so good.
No, that was not good. I was not impressed with that one. But she loves her screwdrivers.
Yeah. I wouldn't say I have a favorite. I mean, I like David Tennant's one because it's quite neat to hold in the hand. There was a great which you can get online. It's the 10th Doctor remote control sonic screwdriver from the One Company. Hmm. Great bit of gear, and you can just choose. You can turn on your DVD player, your Blu-ray player, your television, iPods, everything. You know, you can control it with this. But one of the great things about it is it's very accurate.
And
the sonic, it's the same size. It was made, modeled on David's. David gave them his sonic to model on, and it feels great in the hand to use. I acted in a play last year where I was playing a Doctor Who fan, and I used it in the play, and it felt great to use it because it fitted so well in the hand. Matt's one is a bit bigger, so I find it a bit more clunky. Mm-hmm. But I know some people like that kind of feel. His one's just, it was just a bit too big. Again, you can get the universal remote control, but I found it just a bit too big. But David's one fits very nice in the hand. Of course, the old-fashioned ones are good, but they're slightly different. Tom's and John's, for example.
Well, we've kept you a long time, so I feel it neat. I probably should wrap up. So just a couple of quick things. We've talked about the book. We should probably talk about Doctor Who, the website, for a moment. What will people find there if they go there? Sell your site for a second.
I feel bad when I have to do this. It feels so weird. If you're a Doctor Who fan, you'll find Doctor Who very handy because I report the news, the official news. I release pictures of the BBC, bring them out. Any sort of cool merchandise. I don't report on all the merchandise because there's too much. Mm. There's just absolutely too much. And some of it I don't think is that good. So sorry to those people. But lots of stuff that's good. You'll find reviews on DVDs, on books, on audios. You'll find, I don't do it so much now, but there was a lot of lists that I used to do on the site, which are a bit of fun. They're not meant to be taken too seriously. Mm-hmm. Because Doctor Who fans can be a bit serious sometimes. But you won't find spoilers there. I don't tend to, if I report on, like I have today, it was filming last night, very public filming. Mm-hmm. So I posted some pictures. A chap on Flickr had posted a great gallery of pictures. But I tend not to go into spoilers. Mm-hmm. Because I look at it from the point of view, I don't want to be spoiled. But occasionally the BBC will release a picture that I think is quite spoilery. And it's a visual thing, so I have to say, if you don't want to see this picture, just look away now. Mm-hmm. So I try to avoid all that. And any rumours and things, I tend not to have any dealings with, because there's too many rumours.
I should ask you, we mentioned before we started the official interview, I mentioned that while we were in London, I took my wife and daughter, we went to Cardiff, we went to the Doctor Who Experience, which, aside from the opening video and that interactive part of it, which none of us was terribly impressed with, the rest of it is really good.
Yeah.
The models, the exhibits of the props and those things are really, really good. And the gift shop is great. But yeah. The when we were there for just a handful of weeks, apparently, they had opened the set of the TARDIS to visitors, and you could pay an extra, I don't know, £7 to £10 to go and visit the set. My question is, do you know how much, if at all, the Peter Capaldi TARDIS will differ from the Matt Smith TARDIS?
At the moment, it will differ in absolutely no way whatsoever. The exterior might. I haven't seen any picture of the exterior, but the interior will stay the same, certainly for this season.
Yeah.
As they've only had it for, well, it was last Christmas in 2012 where we got to see the new TARDIS, so it will stay like that, I would imagine, for at least Series 8. Hmm. The exterior will probably, I would imagine, stay the same as well, unless they decide to change it, which they could. But the interior will certainly not change. So your experience of walking around the TARDIS will be current for quite some time.
Very nice.
And how big was it to walk around the TARDIS?
It was, you know what? That was very cool.
Yeah,
extremely cool. And they had, they had some Daleks outside of it. Around, and we got some tremendous pictures, and that was a lot of fun. I certainly would encourage anyone, if they hear that they're opening the TARDIS for the tours again, you want to go see that. It's an excellent touchstone, I think.
Yeah, it's great. I went to a couple of years ago. They had the convention in Cardiff, and we went out to the studios at Rothlock. Just outside Cardiff, and it was the Matt Smith's first TARDIS. And they were about to move it, so you could actually touch the TARDIS console, which you can't do with the new tour. But because they were moving it and stuff, they didn't really care. So you could actually touch everything and feel it, which was great. But it's a very tactile thing to do. You just want to touch things. And it's amazing to be in that environment. But I love seeing the exhibits in the Doctor Who Experience, because they were in Doctor Who and they look so good. Mm.
And I got to say, Cardiff was a lovely city.
Yeah,
and waterfront is beautiful.
Great.
Some very interesting architecture in town. The auditorium, I guess. The studios. In the distance across the bay, there's some very interesting buildings and sculpture. Nice restaurants. People were very nice. If you go there, I'm not telling you, but just people watching this. If you go there, ask ahead how to get from the train, because you'll have to take the train from the train to the Doctor Who Experience, because I don't know why there are no signs at the train station directing you to get there. You either know or you find someone who knows. You will not be able to read a sign to go there.
Yeah, look for signs for Cardiff B.
Yeah, that's follow your nose to the smell the sea air, follow the sea air. But strangely, I thought that was the only thing that about my whole visit to Cardiff that I thought was odd. There are no signs at the train station how to get to the Doctor Who Experience.
I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, I suppose that's true. When you were in Cardiff, did you go to – there's a diner, an American diner in there that they used in Doctor Who.
Oh. Now, why would I go to an American diner in Cardiff?
Because it was in Doctor Who, and it was cool.
No, I probably didn't spend enough time there doing that. We went to the what is called Pizza Depot? What's the pizza? They're all over London and
Pizza Express.
Pizza Express, yes.
Yeah.
Oh. One of many Pizza Express stops were there. Yeah. And
well, you weren't far. It's just around the corner.
Right. Oh,
you've a lot of Doctor Who around there.
Yeah. I now that you say that, I'm thinking. I seem to recall the sign for a diner, and we didn't go there because we're like, we're in Cardiff. Why would we go to an American diner? Well, look, folks, you can find Cameron McEwen's The Who's Who of Doctor Who, A Whovian Guide to Friends, Foes, Villains, Monsters, and Companions to the Good Doctor in great bookstores everywhere, or you can order it right now at a great price at MrMedia.com. If you're watching this video on MrMedia.com, somewhere down here, left or right, you'll see an image. You'll find it. You'll see an image of the book, The Who's Who of Doctor Who. You can click on it, and it'll take you to Amazon.com, whether you're in the U.S., the U.K., anywhere in the world, and you can order the book immediately, have it delivered to your door within a day or two. I encourage you to do that. Yes. It's a really wonderful book. It's a lot of fun. It helped my understanding of the show, and it just reads well. A lot of good explanation, great illustrations, great photos. So tell people where they can find Blogter Who.
You can find Blogter Who if you're aware of the internet. Do you have that in America, the internet?
It sounds Blogter familiar.
BlogterWho.com. Updated daily, just with all the best bits of Doctor Who. Not every bit, because there's just too much in some of it. You don't want to know.
None of Doctor Who's personal bits, though. Private bits, right? None of the dirty bits.
You say that. BlogterWho.com. And I'm on Twitter as well, Blogter Who.
Okay, very good. Cam McEwen, it was a lot of fun. I had no intention of keeping you as long as I did, but it was great fun. You have a terrific sense of humor about you and a lovely book. And thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media today.
Thank you, Bob. My absolute pleasure.